This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Karitzen. As always, I have Steve Smee joining me.
Hey, good evening, everyone.
We got a very special guest coming back on the show. We got JP, known on the evolutionary.org forums as JP4355, but he often just goes as JP. JP, welcome back to the show.
Good evening, Trevor. How you doing? How you doing there, Steve?
Yeah, hanging in there. I actually found something out interesting about myself this week.
You're adopted.
I was eating papaya, and my mouth and my tongue just started burning. And then I didn't think anything of it. And the next day, I ate papaya again, and I swear, my mouth, like, swelled up. So then I looked it up online, and it turns out if you're allergic to latex, there's the same chemical in papaya. So I have an allergy to papaya. Can you believe that? I never knew that before, and I just found that out.
Let me tell you something. You're going to notice this as you get older, because believe me, when I was young, I could eat anything. Nothing bothered me. As you get older, your body starts to change, and all of a sudden, things that maybe you were allergic, but the allergic reaction was so minute, you never noticed it.
Exactly.
You'll start to notice.
Because I never noticed it before. Maybe my tongue would feel a little weird, but now it was just like, whoa. Like, I'm lucky I didn't go into anaphylactic shock. It was crazy. Like, and my mouth is still swollen. It's not swollen, but it's still like kind of like hurting.
Yeah, because that enzyme can actually make your tongue swell so large that it start to block your airway.
Yep, so I was lucky. It's just amazing. What happened with you that you noticed as you gotten older?
I've talked about this before, but with the gluten, because of my hips, it was just really strange. When I first noticed it, I was cutting because I was getting ready to go down the shore. This is like about almost 6 years ago now. So I was like, okay, I'm going to dump all the bread, the pasta and all that, because I wanted to lose some weight real quick. So I cut, wasn't eating much bread. And the bread I was eating was a really high end whole grain bread. So I cut that out. Like 3 days later, all of a sudden my hips started feeling fantastic.
Do you know what that might be due to, though, JP?
Good.
It's only in the last 2 decades that we started using Roundup. So what I think, personally, is I think a lot of people who have wheat sensitivities, it's not actually the gluten in the wheat. They're sensitive to all the Roundup. That's my prediction.
Well, that's been in the grains down here in the States for years. But the thing was, this was organic grain, so it shouldn't have had any Roundup in it. But the thing was that I noticed that after like 3 days, my hips eased up. So I had a slice of this bread after, and the next morning I was damn near crippled, and it just all of a sudden clicked. And I've been that way ever since. So like, it's real easy for me not to eat any wheat products because I pay a price. And while it doesn't bother my hips anymore, because I've got 2 replaced hips, so I got no hip joints original anymore, so I don't have to worry about that. But I do feel it in my other joints because I have osteoarthritis. And again, I didn't get that until I hit my 50s. And that just affects all your joints because it starts to deteriorate the cartilage little by little.
Interesting. JP, have you ever tried like a brown rice bread? Have you ever tried like a gluten-free bread?
You know what? The gluten-free breads that are like brown rice, tapioca, potato flour, if you look at the carb content, you might as well just sit down and have a couple of large teaspoons of sugar. That's the way I look at it, because like, you know this, I'm on a low-carb diet most of the time because I just don't do well on high carbs anymore. So for me I've looked at those breads. First off, they taste like crap. I've tried a few brown rice breads early on. Don't like the taste of them. And they're all like 35 grams of carbs or somewhere in that vicinity. And like the bread I was eating, I did find a bread that was spelt, which was a really nice bread. It was an organic spelt bread. Spelt's the original wheat before they invented the dwarf species in the 60s. So, and that has like very, very little gluten. It's like hardly noticeable when you compare the two. And I did well on that, but now I have trouble finding it.
So you're pretty much not eating any bread anymore?
No, no.
And you feel better?
Oh, a lot better.
Yeah.
Spelt especially often nicknamed ancient wheat. So yes. What you said, JP, is completely true. Yeah. JP, our first listener question is, he wanted you to get into the details of what you're currently doing with your diet, with your carb cycling. He basically just wanted an explanation of what you're currently doing and why you're doing it.
Okay. Basically, the why is because I'll be 65 in a couple of weeks, my body just doesn't handle carbs, high carbs, as well as I did when I was younger. So I found that I have a lot more energy when I'm on a higher fat diet, lower carb. And I really don't need the carbs. I can build muscle without the carbs anymore. So basically, I'm on a carb cycle diet, but I'm on a low carb cycle. I don't normally go above 50 grams of carbs any day. And even on my refeed day, I'm only between like 75 to 90 grams of carbs. And they're mostly in the form of sweet potatoes, because I find that really helps me refuel my liver glycogen when it gets low. So I like that as a refeed. So I don't really cheat all that much. You know what I mean? In the normal realm of what people think of as cheating. Just, I guess as you get older, your taste changes. So I'm not really looking for like a piece of cake or going out and have, you know, crazy fast food. That's just not, for me, a good cheat day would be a bunch of sweet potatoes and a couple of big steaks. You know, I would just have fun going on the extra calories, but good clean calories. And I just do a lot better on it. So I don't know how applicable my style of carb cycling would be for younger guys, because I know when I was younger, I needed a lot more carbs to function and didn't need as high amount of fat. But these days, like I say, I just do a lot better on the fat. In fact, my morning workouts are basically, before workout, I don't eat. I'll have a cup of coffee and I usually throw some MCT oil in there and maybe a little piece of grass-fed butter. So
besides the MCT oil and the butter, what other fats are you getting in?
Coconut oil, olive oil, you know, the good fats. Every now and then some avocados. So, you know, keep it pretty basic.
I wanted to ask JP, how do you cook your sweet potatoes? Do you do anything special to them, or you just bake them in the oven?
Yeah, I just, I peel the skin off them and I rinse them, and while they're still wet, I put them in some aluminum foil and I bake them in the oven, so they kind of steam inside. So they come really nice and moist. They don't get all dried out. And plus, where I am, I found a really good variety of sweet potato. They're called Chinese sweet potatoes. So they're a white potato. They have a really dark burgundy red skin, but the sugar content on them is a lot higher than our standard sweet potato or yam. So they just taste fantastic. So a little one of those goes a long way. So they're usually a good size, and I'll split them up. So I'll make a couple servings out of one potato. So, but that's the way I do them.
Have you ever tried the purple sweet potatoes?
Yeah, yeah.
They're interesting. They kind of taste the same, but they don't really taste any different. What you have to be careful though is if you eat a lot of them, it'll turn your poop purple.
I tried them a few years back, but like I just really been into a thing with these Chinese sweet potatoes, because I have an H Mart, which is an Asian market near me, so they always have them. And since I ran into them, I guess it's been over 10 years ago, I've been really kind of like enamored with them. So every chance I get them into my diet.
I'm going to say one more thing and then I'll let Steve jump in. I'm developing a beetroot supplement, because beets, you know, very, very high in nitrates, really good.
Yeah, I juice them a lot.
I've been pooping purple the last 3 weeks as well. All the beets I've been eating. Steve, I'll let you go in there. Sorry, we'll keep
going. No, I was just gonna chime in the Asian market. Do they sell dog there, JP? No, dog? I was just joking. So you're still over there in Eastern Pennsylvania?
Yeah, yeah.
So you must be excited about Sunday with the Eagles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's been a while for me.
Yeah, it's been since the McNabb days, huh?
Yeah.
For me, as long as the Patriots lose, I'm happy because I hate the fucking Patriots. So
I was just reading something that the quarterback had a couple injuries. I don't know how severe they were, but they said he was like had a nagging shoulder and one other injury that he's been kind of dealing with the last.
Tom Brady?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that he hurt his right hand. He got jammed it or something today. I don't know how bad it is, though.
Yeah, so. Again, I don't know either because they really didn't go into it and he didn't elaborate.
Yeah, so, but oh my gosh, it's going to be a fun weekend, the championship game. So we're looking forward to it. I kind of wanted to ask you something, though, before I forget.
Sure.
And I always seek the, you know, guys. Advice. I've always done this since I was younger. I've always turned to like the, you know, the older guys for advice. And I think the younger guys, it's a shame because the younger guys know everything. Like a lot of young guys know everything. The teenagers and the guys in their 20s, they know everything. So they don't ask anybody anything. But I'm always asking. Doesn't mean I necessarily agree with it or I'm gonna take their advice or something, but whether it's in the gym or life lessons, let me ask you this, JP. You know, you've been through a lot in your life. You were a working man. You said on a prior podcast you worked hard, you know, and that hard labor. I'm sure there's been situations where you've done a job, you didn't get paid for it, or you worked for like 10 15 years for the company and one day they decide to cut your you know, pay you less or, you know, cut your salary or something. How do you overcome that? Because like, how deflating is that to have to go through something like that? And I never experienced that, but I have, you know, in the past year experienced that in my life. And it hurts, man, because you work so hard, you bust your ass. And then one day it's like that hard work doesn't get rewarded. It gets punished. So I'm just curious, how do you overcome that and how do you stay positive and not get angry?
You know, it's just, again, I myself have only experienced that like on a couple day jobs when I used to do a little extra work on the weekends. A couple times I got beat by people I was working for because you're working as a subcontractor and all of a sudden they give you, that contractor didn't pay me, so I can't afford to pay you. So no problem, that's fine. So you got a free day's work out of me, it'll never happen again. But as far as the large companies that I worked for, I never actually had that issue. In fact, I was very fortunate. The last company I worked for, I worked my way from the ground up to a job supervisor. So did very well with the company. They had a really good profit sharing program. They also had savings programs. I mean, the guy that owned the company, actually, he was one of those guys that came here from Scotland with his two aunts with a couple dollars in his pocket and, you know, turned himself into a multimillionaire, developed a worldwide company and, you know, did everything he could to make sure all his people that worked for him in the long run would be looked out for. So I was very fortunate in that way.
Yeah, actually, when we were going on the Zoom, the first thing I saw on my email, you know how they show you news?
Right.
And the first thing I saw was about a teenage girl who got kidnapped. And it turns out that she got kidnapped into some sex trade thing. So it's like we're bombarded with all this horrible news and all this bad shit that happens in the world. And you seem like an empathetic person. Like, you know, how do you not like, you know, I have to ask you because you've probably seen a lot more stuff. You were in the military too.
Yes.
So you probably saw a lot of shit. But how do you like not like just say, man, you know, this is such a fucked up world. How do you like keep the glass
half full? How do you keep turning it on? You just have to. I mean, you have to understand that, you know, no matter where you are in the world, there are good people and there are bad. Some parts of the world, the bad people outnumber the good, but there are good people there. I mean, and you see that all the time on the news too, where the good people just pop out of the woodwork. I mean, you know, look at all the problems we have with the weather, you know, down in Texas and all. And people just jumped in to help other people. They didn't know them, but they saw somebody in need. And that's what you have to do. I mean, even though if you got beat to a pulp by other people, when the opportunity presents itself, you got to stand up and represent, you know what I mean, for the human race. So you see somebody in need and you can do something, you help them.
JP, are you religious?
I would describe myself as spiritual more than religious.
Okay. You've probably heard the Bible quote, "Today is the day that the Lord has made. I will be glad and rejoice in it." You've probably heard that, right? It's a pretty famous quote. Notice how it says, "I will be glad and rejoice in it." It doesn't say some days, you know, oh, when I feel like it, you know, like I really feel like happiness is a choice. And I feel like the majority of people who are on antidepressants and things like that, they kind of have this why me syndrome, you know, this the grass is greener. Like I really think like you have to decide to be happy. You have to wake up every single day and just be grateful for what you do have, because there's always going to be something you don't have. Your neighbor's always going to have some object or...
Sure. I mean, it's the old, the grass is greener on the other side syndrome. I mean, you can spend your entire life looking at the world through those type of glasses.
Because like you could look at, let's get relate this to bodybuilding, right? You could look at someone and be like, oh, I wish I had his arms, right? He's probably looking at you and going, oh, I wish I had his abs. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I go to that big guy at the gym and I'm like, oh man, I wish I was as big as him. And he's looking at me, he's like, oh, I wish I had that, you know, pretty boy model physique. Like, it's funny, you know, we're never happy with what we have.
Right.
I feel like it's a human trait that we want what we don't have and we can't appreciate what we do have.
Or, I mean, there does come that time when you start to appreciate what you have, but it's usually later in life after you beat yourself up over it for many, many years. You know, I know when I was younger and I was a power lifter, you know, I'd be like in awe of some of the guys that like that, the heavyweights, you know, because I was basically a middleweight when I power lifted. So, you know, the guys that were like 260 to 300 pounds, these guys were phenomenally strong. I've seen guys like, you know, that I worked out with lift weight that I'll never even touch ever in my life. You know what I mean? It's just never going to happen. And it just, I would be simply in awe and going, how is that even possible that a human can lift that kind of weight, you know? And this was before the days of the bench shirts and all these power gear that they wear now for lifting. So, you know, but it's always something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I tore my rotator cuff and, you know, I was really depressed about it because I couldn't lift heavy anymore. And I'd been lifting heavy for years. And now a year and a half later, I'm like looking back, I'm like, wow, you know what? That was a blessing because I kind of changed my goals and I went from being just like a power lifter and I just cut down, you know, I've cut down quite a bit. I'm down to like, you guys will see my pictures when my fasting article comes out, but I've cut down to 7 or 8%. You know, I can't lift the kind of weight I did before, but I'm a hell of a lot more healthier and I look way better in the mirror. So there's always like adversity, you know, and it can end up being a blessing. That's what I've noticed.
Think about how much you've learned during that time too, Steve. Like I bet you 2 years ago, if we had an expert on fasting, you'd just say, this guy's an idiot. That's stupid. Right. But now you're all about it and you're learning it.
No, I used to like see like guys like benching, like, you know, one plate and I'd be like, these fuckers, you know, they're weaklings. And now I'm going and doing one plate for reps. And I don't even bother to throw on, you know, two plates. I just do my reps, get hypertrophy, and I'm good to go. No issues, no injuries, and I'm happy. So I don't gotta go on there like a gorilla anymore and throw on three plates, you know, and sling it around. So
let me tell you, I know exactly where you are, because like for the last like 20 years, I haven't been able to squat. Since I have both hips replaced, I've actually been able to break parallel again squatting, because I started to get some mobility back. So now it was come like, okay, so what am I going to use the squat with? I mean, am I going to try and start to squat heavy again? And like, I just decided, like, even though my surgeon said, because I asked him, I have any weight restrictions, he said, you'll break your bones before the hips fail. I said, okay, I don't think I want to push that. So what I've basically been doing is to throw 135 pounds, throw it on my shoulders, and just been squatting for reps, and it's working. And like, as far as deadlifting, I got to my body weight and I'm stopped. I'm just going to do as many reps as I can. And I'm happy, because I haven't been able to do that in like 20 years. And my legs are finally getting bigger. You know, they're almost back up to 28 inches. I haven't seen that in I don't know how many years. It's been over two decades that they were anywhere near that size. So,
you know. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, JP had both his hips replaced, correct, JP?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so how have you been doing since then?
Great. I mean, I had a couple little issues, had a little problem with my neck. I actually damn near broke my neck in 74 in a car accident. I couldn't use my right arm for about 6 months. Had such bad pressure from a disc that slipped out. And there was a little issue with a hairline fracture there. And that's kind of come back to roost, old injury. But, you know, I worked around it. My neck was stuck. I was stuck looking left and down for about 2 weeks until I could get the pressure to relieve. And don't ask me how it happened. Can't trace it back to anything. It's just one of those deals where you get enough injuries over time, they come back to haunt you every now and then. So you just kind of work through them as best you can.
So JP, we had another listener email in a question for you. Sure. You obviously look fantastic for 65. You know, most people wouldn't believe that age unless, you know, they heard it straight from the horse's mouth. He wants to know, what are you currently on steroid wise? And also, what does your current supplement regimen look like? So he's asking about steroids and over the counter supplements.
Okay. I alluded to this before. After my first hip operation, I went on a bit of HGH to help me heal. So after the second one, I did a short run, and now I just started another run of HGH. I happen to have a friend that has a real good connection for it. So I started that, let me see. I'm trying to remember. A little over a month ago, I started the HGH. And now I just started a cycle of Test-C, Tritren, and EQ, but at low amounts. Test-C at 300, Tritren at 450, EQ at 600.
You have no issues with Tren at your age?
No, I have no issues with it. The only issue I have with Tren is I wanted to include Proveron, but my libido was already so crazy high, I'm scared to add in the Proveron. I'm like wearing my girlfriends out, seriously. So, like, yeah, right now the Proveron is just kind of hanging out at the house.
So, got you. And then I'm guessing you probably have a pretty in-depth over-the-counter supplement protocol. What does that look like?
Ooh. I would actually have to go to my counter and pull some of this stuff out. I kind of cycle through supplements. There are certain supplements that I'll go in for 12 weeks and then go off. So right now I'm on a multi-B. I take my magnesium, potassium, taurine, vitamin C, zinc. I wish you would have told me this earlier. I had to make the list out because I know I'm forgetting a whole bunch of stuff. I take separate chelated minerals. I tend to like break a lot of these things up because I've found that I cannot find a multivitamin, multi-mineral that has the amounts that I specifically need. Because with some of my issues, like I have a problem with a nerve from my back surgery in 1977. It's called a radiculopathy, where the scar tissue on my back presses on the nerve. So it's kind of like, you know how diabetics get a neuropathy, where the nerve gets agitated? This is the same thing. The scar tissue presses on the nerve, so I get these goofy shooting pains. So for that, I have found that high doses of methylcobalamin really helps. So I take 5,000 micrograms of that every day. So that helps keep those nerves going well so they don't get all goofy.
What is that exactly, JP?
What's that?
What you just said you take for your nerve.
The vitamin B12, but the methylcobalamin form. The methylcobalamin, mm-hmm. It's more bioavailable than the regular B12.
Is that like, is that a liquid form or is it a capsule?
No, it's a little tablet, but it's sublingual.
Oh, so okay. So
you just put it under your tongue.
Okay. And you just get that from the vitamin shop?
Yeah, exactly. I actually do get it from the vitamin shop, although a whole bunch of different stores carry it.
Okay. And then you never thought about just injecting the B12?
I do from time to time.
Okay. So yeah. That does help with that?
Yeah, it really does help.
Really? Okay.
That's so if I'm not doing the injectable methylcobalamin, then I'm doing the sublingual.
Okay. So, like, why do you think it helps? Is it just because you think you're B12 deficient or?
No, I'm not B12 deficient. I've actually been tested for it many times. It's that the extra B12 helps the nerves function more readily.
Okay. That's a good tip because I have a pinched nerve in my neck and it radiates down my arm sometimes. So,
yeah.
And then I also have a pinched nerve in my elbow that radiates down into my fingers. Ironically, that has improved a lot just from kind of backing off on arm workouts and stuff, just the way I sleep too.
Steve, you know Dr. Amy?
Yes, yes.
She's a big B12 advocate. She says every athlete should be supplementing with B12.
Yeah.
She says like there's no upper limit. She's like, unless you're using like an entire vial per day or like something absurd, she's like, the more B12, the better.
And I'll tell you what, honestly, you know, I originally got onto the B12. My old physician that used to write for my test C back in the late 70s, 80s, he was a big proponent of B12. When I used to go into the office, he used to always give me a big shot of that. And he would, at that time, he used to mix liver and iron in with it. That was like his magic potion. He was like, here, you need this. You're lifting, you really need this stuff. It'll really help, and it really did. And ever since that time, I don't deal too much with the liver and iron anymore, but, you know, because I get it through food a lot. But when I was really pushing it to the max, smashing heavy weight, it really helped my performance a lot. I would feel the difference after an injection.
I'm gonna say one quick thing about vitamin B12 supplements for our listeners. So vitamin B12 is a very unique vitamin in that it needs to be bound to something called intrinsic factor in your stomach in order to pass through your intestines and be absorbed. Now, the problem with an oral pill vitamin B12 supplement is that there's a limited amount of intrinsic factor in your stomach at any one period. So the majority of that supplement is not going to be absorbed. So that's why a vitamin B12 injection or a sublingual vitamin B12 spray is absorbed so much better. Because it goes straight into your bloodstream, it totally bypasses the digestive system and it's almost 100% absorbed. So if you're going to buy a vitamin B12 supplement, vitamin B12 injections are the best. If you don't want to do injections for whatever reason, or if it's, you know, it's for like your kid or something like that, a vitamin B12 spray that's absorbed sublingually would be the second best option. Steve, I know, Steve, you want to get in there. Go ahead.
Well, I want to kind of piggyback on the steroid topic. It's another question. I want to kind of pick at your experience on this, JP. Sure. What do you think about this, the Dallas McCarver, Rich Piana thing where they passed away in the past year. And, you know, basically abusing the shit out of steroids and stuff, because you have the two ends of the spectrum. You have the spectrum that says, well, you know, they push it to the limits, they die doing what they love, blah, blah, blah. And you have the other end of the spectrum, which is, wow, what a waste. So where do you stand on that?
I look at it this way. I mean, how much is known about their personal health conditions? I mean, was there anything that they were genetically predisposed to, or did they have any types of health issues prior to this? I can't remember, but I seem to remember that McCarver had some type of health issue.
Well, he had, he was abusing, I think, 10 grams of steroids a week, and at his peak, and he had a lot of heart issues, and he also had cancer and growing inside him. Didn't even know that. So he had quite a bit.
What JP's referring to is Dallas McCarver had two close family members die of heart related issues. I think it was an uncle and a grandfather or something, but like heart issues definitely were in
genetic
blueprint. Yeah.
So, and I mean, and there again, like Rich Piana, you have to look genetically and see what was in their family history. Was there anything? A lot of times there's stuff in people's, you know, genetic family history. Like my family history, we all have a thing with high cholesterol. And that's been something I've been dealing with since I've been in my 20s. The first time I had a cholesterol test done, it was like 300 something. But the strange thing is I always post an extremely high HDL. My HDL is never lower than like mid 90s. And I've had it post as high as like 106. And I know a lot of guys are lucky to post 60 or 70 HDLs. And even on cycle, like I'll watch it when I'm on cycle, but it usually doesn't get any lower than 75, 80. When I'm on a cycle. So, and HDL is protective if you have a high LDL. And I'm lucky there because my triglycerides have always stayed in the normal range. So it's only been the LDL that gets high, but because HDL is protective of that. And then I get the factor test that looks at the particle size, because that's the test you need to get done. Either the VAP or the LPP test, because they give you all the different particle sizes, and that's important. Because with LDL, if it's small and BB-like, that's the stuff that'll stick together and give you arterial plaque and cause problems.
You also get lipoprotein A tested?
What's that? Yes.
You also get lipoprotein A? Okay. That's a good one to get tested.
Yeah, and the LPP test, they do that. So they test all those different fragments. So, and that's important because regular cholesterol testing doesn't test for that. So
another new type of test, which is really catching wind, is a DPA, a meridian DPA test. And what that does is it tests to see how much plaque is in your arteries. Because the problem with cholesterol, blood pressure, heart rate, things like that is it doesn't test how much plaque is in your arteries. 90% of heart attack victims actually have perfect cholesterol. So the more tests you can get done, the better. If you Google Meridian DPA machine, you can probably find someone in your area that does the test. They're not that expensive. They're like $60 to $80. I actually have a couple at the university. We own three machines. So if anyone's in Winnipeg, send me an email and I can
come on over.
Fly down, JP. I'll test you for free. It'll cost you a $500 flight, but I'll save
you. It's up. You're in Winnipeg. It's up, not down for me.
Well, depending which way you're looking at it.
Up and over.
Yeah. Bring
I'm in Philly, so you're up and over.
So what I wanted to ask JP is what sort of cholesterol support supplements are you taking? I know you're a big advocate of fish oil.
Yeah. Fish oil is my number one thing. Psyllium husks. I've increased them now that every time I'm on cycle, I'll increase them. So Usually till like about 3-4 teaspoons a day. So 2 in the morning, 2 before bed. I find that really helpful. I started some niacin now because that helps me when I'm on trend. The only thing is you got to deal with the flushing a little bit, but if you take an aspirin with it, it helps the flushing. I'm not hearing you right now, Trevor.
Yeah, Trevor's on mute. But what else, do you add that when you're on like trend?
Yes, I do.
Trend really probably screws up your cholesterol, huh?
Oh, yes, it does. So the niacin helps.
So trend more than any other steroid, you would say, really screws it up, correct?
Oh, yeah, and especially for me. I've noticed it.
Trend is the single worst steroid for cholesterol levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really I ran trend for like 2 or 3 years off and on. And it really did a number on my numbers, and I actually haven't run it since. So really, I think it's important for people to cycle off a trend. If you run a cycle of trend, make sure you don't run it again for a while.
JP, did you watch the Live With episode I did with Dave Palumbo on RX Muscle?
No, I didn't.
He tried to argue that genetics are the biggest factor of cardiovascular disease risk. And he said, you know, steroids are a small factor in Dallas McCarver's death. And I said, go hop on 100 milligrams of Trenace every other day, run that for 3 weeks, and then get blood work done. Let me know how your cholesterol levels look. If you want to scare yourself, test your cholesterol levels while on Tren. It'll be pretty freaking scary.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, plus the thing is with these guys, I mean, I don't know for sure exactly they were doing, but I mean, from what I understand, they were doing some huge amounts. And that over and above anything else, if you have any type of genetic weakness, it's going to exploit it. AAS will exploit any genetic problems you have, especially when you're doing high amounts. You're doing a couple grams or whatever in combination a week. You better be in top shape, and you better make sure you're in top shape by doing blood work, going out and getting tested. And I don't know, you know, how pro-health they were. Were they getting blood work, you know, every couple months done? Like, I get blood work on or off cycle done at least 4 times a year, and on cycle, I'll have to do it a couple more times, via a private lab. But, you know, through the VA, I get it done 4 times a year. So that's irregardless of what I'm doing. And I don't know how many people really pay that close attention.
I don't think they care, to be honest with you. I mean, we have Boston Lloyd on, and he says he doesn't even – he won't do it because he doesn't even want to look at it.
Yeah, well, he's scared of the results he'll see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, it comes right down to that. What you don't know won't hurt you. So, I mean, you know, and I really feel that a lot of this could be avoided. If the guys are...
Ignorance is bliss, JP.
Of course it is. You know how that is. Ignorance is always bliss. But, I mean, there comes a time, especially, you know, you're living that life, you're making money through it. It'd be nice to enjoy the money you made through all the hard work you had to do to get there.
Well, you might be able to take it with you when you die. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
Find out one day.
I haven't heard back from anybody, so.
JP, I wanted to ask you about the psyllium husk. How do you take it?
You know what? I've tried it a million ways, and I find the easiest way for me is I just throw a couple tablespoons of water, and I get it down as fast as I can, followed by another large glass of water. Yeah, because it has a tendency to gel up. So I hate throwing it into my protein shakes, which was originally how I used to take them. But it just, you know, it just, once it gels up, it's got a whole other mouthfeel. So I like, real fast, I toss the psyllium into some water, stir it with a spoon, and then I get it down. And then I just down water after it, you know what I mean? So for me, that's the easiest way. Why, you have a particular method that works? Maybe.
No, that's what I do too. I just
missing something.
Figured out something smarter.
Nah. When it comes to psyllium husk, the longer they stay in any kind of liquid, the thicker they get. So
the best to get them down. The beautiful thing about psyllium husk is not only will it lower your total cholesterol levels, it will keep you regular like clockwork.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
Steve, I saw you wanted to chime in.
What's that?
I saw Steve wanted to chime in.
No, I was going to say, I like to just eat it, but the problem is it sticks to the top of my mouth, and I can't have to, like, scrape it off afterwards. So I don't mind the taste, though. Some people say it tastes nasty. I don't mind the taste, but it just sticks to
the it's kind of that, I mean, the ones I use have kind of like a toasted quality to them.
Yeah, it kind of tastes like oatmeal. It's not bad. Yeah,
if I had to give them a taste or like oat bran, more kind of like oat bran, because I eat oat bran a lot. In fact, what I do is like if I make sometimes I get this 99% fat-free ground chicken, and I'll make up burgers, and I'll throw oat bran in them for a binder, and it works real nice, gives them a nice flavor.
Interesting.
Yeah, most people would use breadcrumbs. Oat bran does the same thing.
So, JP, we get a lot of questions on supplements. I'm wondering, do you use any sort of like pre-workout supplements, BCAAs, anything like that? Or do you think none of those things really have any merit?
I mean, it depends. Sometimes I do use BCAAs, but in a fasted state, because like I said, I do my morning workouts fasted. I have for the longest time. So I found for me, like personally, but I don't go crazy about it. Like if I think I'm really going to be doing a heavy workout, I might throw some in. Usually what I do is, and I've gone over this with you before, I use this product called Myazine, which is a whey hydrolysate. And so I usually just take like, if I remember correctly, 3 scoops of it, or like 25 grams of protein and like 50 some grams of carbs, but it's, you know, it's all fast carbs. So what I'll do is I'll just take 1 scoop and throw it in some water, and I might sip on that through a weight training. So that's usually like as crazy as I get.
And then any pre-workouts, or do you think those are garbage?
I used to try pre-workouts. I was never into the stim thing, so I never really felt them. It wasn't like something where I'm like, okay, my pre-workout, I could do so much more because I'm taking it versus not taking it. And I never got that effect. But like, you know, most guys that are doing pre-workouts are doing these heavily stimmed up pre-workouts. And that's a whole nother story, you know?
I have a very intense personality. Like, I'm very go, 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 go. I love the high stim pre-workouts. I don't use them because I know they're horrible for your adrenal glands. They do more harm than good. But I mean, I love that mile a minute feeling where you're just like racing and it feels like you're in like fast motion. I love that feeling. But that's, again, they're not good for you because they just burn out your adrenal glands and they do more harm than good.
Yeah, I was never big on stims. Just they tend to just like toast me around the edges, you know. I feel burnt out after. I'll tell you what. Actually, you want to get a nice clean rush? 5,000 micrograms of methylcobalamin before you work out will give you a nice clean energy boost without getting all frayed around the edges. And without things getting all crazy and then you having a crash later. So
what about coffee, JP? Do you drink coffee?
Yeah, of course I do. Yeah.
Steve doesn't drink coffee.
No?
No. I can't believe it either.
I really enjoy coffee. So, but I just drink it in the morning. I have a couple cups in the morning, black, no cream, no sugar.
Have you ever tried adding like chaga into your coffee?
Chaga. It sounds familiar, but remind me, what is it?
It's a mushroom.
Oh, it's okay. And I was going to say, I knew it sounded familiar. No, I haven't.
That's what I do. I do half chaga, half coffee. Chaga, look it up. It's really interesting. It's got the highest antioxidant content out of any food on earth. And it's an enotropic. It increases cognitive function. without being a stimulant, and it's full of B vitamins. It's a natural source of vitamin D, vitamin K. It's really, really interesting.
Where do you get that, Trevor?
InnotechNutrition.com sells it. That's where I get mine.
So, but it's not in the produce section. It's not like with the
mushrooms. No.
There's a place I used to buy stuff from called Superman Herbs, and they sell all types of mushrooms and stuff, and they probably sell it. So I'll have to check them out on that.
Yeah, so there's actually been studies showing that the chaga mushroom enhances how efficient your central nervous system works.
Okay.
So if you can find it in the produce department, right?
You can't. That's what I'm saying.
But believe me, hey, Steve, I go into the Asian food market, and they got damn near every mushroom known to man. There's no chaga.
All right. So what do you do after the workout? Because you have a lot of young guys, after the workout, they run over to the protein bar, and they start yelling, they need protein, they need protein. What do you do after your workout?
After my workout, I mean, first off, the gym I work out in has no protein bar. My gym's kind of old school. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
They have two floors. The first floor is pretty much old school. You know, there's actually a powerlifting club that still meets there like 5 days a week. So that's pretty much the first floor. All old school gym. Dumbbells that go up to 250 pounds, you know, so all that. And the second floor is like, you know, they got the spinning class up there and all that other stuff.
So what do? You go home and just put together a balanced meal, or what do you do?
No, what I'll do is, like I said, I have that product, myosine. So I'll bring some extra with me, a second scoop, toss that in. And then I'll bring, depending on what my macros are for that day, I bring another scoop or two of just some whey isolate that I use. So it'll be anywhere between, since it's 26 grams a scoop. If I'm using more myosine, I'll only bring one scoop. If I'm using less myosine, then I'll bring two scoops. So that'll be what I do, and then when I go home, then I'll have a meal.
JP, we got a couple of minutes left. Sure. Talk to us about whey protein supplements. This is something there's so much confusion on. People think, you know, whey protein is whey protein. Talk to us about the difference between, you know, the whey protein isolate, whey protein concentrate, and why you're using an isolate.
Okay. So you have whey concentrates are usually about 80% protein by volume. They all contain a lot of lactose, so a lot of people have problems with gas, indigestion, bloating. Then you have the isolates, which are usually around 88 to 90%, a little over 90%. And they have no lactose in them, just have better bioavailability. And then you have the hydrolysate, which is a pre-digested form. They're usually between 92 to 94% protein per 100 grams. So I just found that for where I get it, there's so little difference in the concentrate to isolate. I just like the isolate a lot better because, like, I look at it from personally, I don't want the extra carbs, fat. A lot of times there's more sodium in the concentrate than there in the isolate. I actually can get a concentrate if I want it that's lactose-free. But I'd rather spend a couple extra dollars and just go with the isolate because it's more protein per 100 grams, you know? So where you're looking at 80% protein per 100 grams with a concentrate, with the isolate, I'm looking like at the one I get is 90%. So I like that difference.
So, you know, we're about to finish up. I want to ask you, JP, the protein thing. I know like back in the 80s and 90s, I think maybe more in the 90s, everyone was saying you need like 400 or 500 grams of protein a day, yada, yada, yada. And then like since then, I think people with experience have figured out you don't need as much protein as people believed at that time. Have you kind of evolved? Did you evolve consuming more protein during the 80s and 90s and then come back down? Or have you always stuck at the same amount?
I mean, I'll be quite honest. When I was younger, I ate more protein because I could eat more. You know what I mean? And I was bigger. So I ate more because I was bigger and I needed that to maintain my weight. But I have never, ever eaten anywhere above 250 grams of protein at any time in my career. I've never gone over that. Never needed to. I think anything over that, unless you're a really huge guy, you know, if you're a 300 pounder and, you know, and you're like 8-9% body fat, then yeah, you probably need that much. You know what I mean? But if you're a guy at 225 or below, 250 grams of protein is more than enough. I don't really think you need that more. You know, you can make up the difference, especially if you're younger. You know, you can make up the difference in good quality carbs and good fats.
Yeah, I remember like 12 years ago on Elite Fitness, if you posted your diet and you had less than 400 or 500 grams of protein daily, you got flamed. They flamed you. And it's like now everyone says, yeah, you only need 100, 150 grams of protein a day. So it's like amazing how things.
Well, the thing is, I mean, see, in my early days, there was no such thing as protein powder. So if you couldn't get it down your gullet, it just didn't exist. And there's no way in hell nobody was eating 300 grams of protein back then. It was impossible. I mean, you would literally have to be eating morning, noon, and night. You wouldn't have time to do anything else. I mean, and there's a limit to how much you can actually eat. These guys doing 400, 500 grams of protein, they couldn't have been getting that through food. That's an enormous amount of food. They had to be doing all protein shakes, which, in my estimation, there's really a limit to how much benefit they will give you. A couple a day, yeah. Over and above that, there I just think, you know, you're kind of pissing in the wind.
So, JP, we're at our hour here. I really want to thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
Based on the scientific literature, anything above 1 gram per pound of body weight, and that's lean body mass. That doesn't
That's not your body fat. Weight. Yeah.
So let's say you're 200 pounds at 10% body fat, you'd use 180 pounds because you have 20 pounds of fat.
Right.
Anything above 1 gram per pound of body weight saw no additional increase. So I'm simple. I just would say whatever you weigh, you don't have to worry about your body fat unless you're like really overweight. 1 gram per pound of protein per pound of body weight, and that's all you need. And that's even more than you need, but I mean, better be a little bit on the extra side than on the underside. And then anything more than that is just going to cause gastric distress. It's going to do more harm than good. So
yeah, and just let me throw in one more thing. For anybody that's eating that much a day, make sure you're taking your digestive enzymes with your meals. If not, a lot of this stuff is never going to get broken down and absorbed by your body.
You know? A good probiotic is another good supplement to take.
Yeah, yeah. That helps things keep on going. And so will the psyllium husk. So they're like the triumvirate there. Digestive enzymes, psyllium husk, probiotics.
For any of our listeners who are looking for a really good quality whey protein isolate, the board sponsor NeedToBuildMuscle.com makes a really good product called Whey to Build Muscle. It's a pure whey isolate, naturally flavored and sweetened with stevia. So it's a really, really good option. It contains no whey concentrate. So when you're shopping for a whey protein powder, make sure to read the label, because it's a very shady industry. What the label will say is it'll say whey protein isolate, but it will contain whey protein isolate. It won't be a pure whey protein isolate. If you flip over the ingredient list, the first ingredient will be whey protein concentrate. The second ingredient will be whey protein isolate. So you really, really got to be a smart consumer. Read the labels, read the supplement facts. JP, do you have any closing words before I finish off the show?
Yeah, just let me add to that on the isolate. It should say 100% whey protein isolate. And then you should also look on the back to check the ingredients label. But on the front, it should say 100% whey protein isolate. Then you know there's a pretty good chance when you turn it around and look at the ingredient list, that's what you'll see.
JP is an absolute vet. I mean, this guy knows more than me and Steve put together. He's on the evolutionary.org forums as at JP4355. If you sign up on evolutionary.org, if you post a thread, JP, he's on there every day. He'll answer your threads for free. We are so lucky to have you, JP. Keep up the good work, man. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thank you.